Hello, I'm Isawellen, and this is Isawellen Writes Stories for Adults. Hello, this is a replay of an interview I got to do with a writing duo, the science fiction, fantasy, romance author duo of Octavia Kaur. There were some difficulties at the beginning getting both on at the same time, which was not their fault. It just sometimes happens, and we got that worked out, but it did take about 15 minutes, so I wanted to let you know that I cut that chit-chat and so on, because this interview went long. We had such a good time talking. There were so many interesting subjects to explore. We just couldn't seem to stop. So it was a great interview. I really enjoyed it, and I'm so glad that they came on, and I got to learn a little bit about world building and the things to do and the things not to do and working together and when you find that synergy with somebody and so on, you know, all of that stuff. So it's a great story how they became story writers and their unfolding story of who they are now as writers. So I'm Isawellen. This is Isawellen Writes Stories for Adults. And I hope you enjoy.
We were talking about kind of how you started, become a writing duo. I didn't hear, you asked her a question. What was the question you like prompted her? Because that was a good question. Do you remember what you asked Amanda? You're like, and Amanda can answer if she's here.
Oh, how you came up with Kaur?
Kaur is just another name for Persephone, and she's one of my favorite goddesses. And so instead of it being Persephone, which is or Octavia Persephone, which kind of seemed like a mouthful, it seemed a little bit more prudent to use Kaur.
So that's good. I like it. That is awesome. And so your cousins, have you like cousins since like played at each other's house when you were little kind of cousins and lived in each other's pockets kind of cousins, long distance cousins? I had one cousin. I was over there. She was like my best friend when I was little. So what kind of how would you define your relationship, your friend relationship?
Our moms are cousins. We'd met a couple times at our nanny's, my great-grandmother's house, growing up, but we never really talked much. We have a six-year age difference.
So yeah, I was going to say, I was more friends with Haley's older sisters. And so, like, Haley and I kind of saw each other in passing, mostly. Like she said, at our great grandma's house. And so during things where we would gather, we would see each other.
Like holidays. So you're kind of, you know, did you do that thing, the old adults after dinner or before dinner in one room and the kids are all in another room and just kind of either bored or I don't know, you know, playing a game or not playing, but they tend to separate, you know, you scatter in the house. We did that in my grandma, you know.
I feel like we were all kind of thrown outside.
Oh, there you go.
Okay, the kids go outside. The adults stay inside and play cards and stuff. So, like, we were all thrown out into the backyard.
Oh, that's even better. Did they lock the door? Were they those kind of parents? Yeah. You're staying outside for at least an hour. I have to pee. Go to a tree. I mean, you know.
I don't remember them locking the door, but I distinctly remember a few of the kids running into the sliding glass door that was there. So they didn't lock us out, but they definitely
closed it.
Yeah, they're like, stay outside, it's fine.
You're fine, stay out, go play. Yeah. Let us play nice. Cards and have another glass of wine, go play. My family gatherings were fun, and we did family gatherings, and I had friends with come over as an adult, but it was this completely different era. There was something very different about my grandparents. They'd all, and my aunts and uncles, and they'd play poker, and drink a lot. Mm-hmm. And then we were either outside or in the basement or another, you know, it was, we did our thing. You come in, you steal food, you leave. And, but those are actually really good memories for me. So that's why I ask. I think it's neat that you guys are cousins, your actual, you know, even second cousins and writing together. That's, and that you kind of developed that, I guess you must, if you're writers, you must, you know, there's a certain kind of compatibility now that you've discovered in your, I mean, do you talk all the time now? How does your writing relationship, why are you laughing? Are you like, I know you're not in the same states, but are you like on the phone with each other, especially during a book? Oh,
10 hours a day. Oh, no. We're more like sisters than me and my actual sisters are.
Oh, so, okay, so now that makes me think, you know, instead of an Alexa or whatever in the house, you have your somebody's always in the speakerphone or something, and you're somehow connected on the, right. At all times.
We pretty much have, both of us have speakerphone on right beside us while we're writing, and then if something comes up where we're like, suck, or have a question, we're like, hey, what do you think about this? That's a good idea.
Oh, that's fantastic. So do you
but
write
we write in docs, so we write at the same time.
So you're writing in Google Docs?
Yes.
Are you like writing on the same document at the same time or a different chapter?
Yes.
At the same time? Oh.
So basically normally, how it goes is I write the first draft and then she goes behind me and writes the second draft and adds to it.
How cool is that? I could just see the way the little cursor moves, you know. You're way down at the bottom and she's at the top. Oh, delete, put in.
We do that to each other a lot. We'll be like, oh my gosh, what happened to the doc? And I'm like, oh, never mind. I just deleted something. I'm so sorry. Hold on. It's fine.
Well, I'll be writing and my screen will go blank. And I'm like, what?
Yeah. Oh, no.
Or she'll start highlighting everything as I'm writing. I'm like, what's happening? What? She's like, oh, hold on. I'm just doing something real quick. Just trying to get the word count. Just trying to, like,
oh, yeah. I just want to know where we are.
Oh, we have to split this chapter. Is it too long?
Right.
Like, it'll I'll normally be, like, a couple
listen,
chapters
you've added
ahead
4,000 words. Like, can we please split this up?
So what especially is your... on the one we're currently on, we have chapters that are, like, 6,000 words. And we're like, oh, my God, this isn't even a smut scene. Oh, God.
I know. So that's kind of like what I'd like. I split my chapters up into reasonable scenes, and I try not to have them be too long. But so I get that question actually from newbie writers all the time. So, you know, how long should a chapter be? Mine generally, well, as long as it needs to be. But if it needs to be 10,000 words, you might need to change. Yeah. That's a little long for a chapter. I don't know. How do you guys decide on your chapters?
The same way. A chapter is as long as it needs to be. The only time we try to split it up is if it seems, like we said, where it's like 6,000 words, and we're like, okay, is there a natural place where we can split this, or does it all have to be here?
Yeah.
And so if it like changes days, or they change scenery, okay, we can split this into two chapters. You know what I mean? But
yeah.
If it's all one place, one thing, and it's just like a big action scene, it stays.
Right. So since you're writing together, you can't be pantsers. I would think that would be a little hard. So how do you, especially when you're writing such awesome, incredible aliens? When I, as a pantser, when I'm writing an alien, I kind of develop what they look like and who they are and some of their background story in that first couple of chapters, and then if I need to do edits later, I do, but I don't sit down and decide, okay, he's going to have this, and that. How do you guys create your interesting characters, their design? How do you guys decide that?
Normally it happens with me calling Amanda being like, don't get mad. Don't get mad.
Is that the first thing you say?
She does. She'll message me and she'll be like, hey, don't get mad. And I'm like, oh, God.
Oh, no.
Why? Like, either you're like, hey, I have a new idea for a book, or you're like, so I wanted to add this into this. Or it's always something like that. And I'm like, I don't know which one to be nervous about. I'm not sure. And then I always get the call like, okay, so I was thinking. And it would be really cool. What if we did something like this? And I'm always like, you know that we're in the middle of this. Yeah. And she's like, yeah. But can we like write this down so that we don't forget this guy? Or we don't forget this girl? And I'm like, so we have like just pages and pages and pages and docs full of notes for like things we're going to do at some point. And it all stems from, hey, don't get mad. Don't get mad. And like every single time.
I'm the panster. She's more of a, hey, we need to write some type of outline so that I know where we're going with this. And I'm the one who's just like, no, they tell me where we're going. I don't know where I'm going.
It always, but we always like, we have like this rough outline. And then like, we'll get like with the one we're working on, we'll get, you know, a few chapters in. And then we'll be like, you know what? Let's get rid of this part and this part and this part, and let's change this around. So we end up just kind of hamstering the planning.
Yeah, I would say we're more hybrid.
It's like somewhere in between.
Yeah, you kind of get the well, that's interesting. Kind of, you're just working together. You're just, so you're planstering.
I guess we're planstering.
You're planstering. That's what you're doing. You're doing the hybrid planstering.
I mean, the amount of plants we have, that works too.
That was in the bio too. Who has the plant weakness? Who's the one who goes to the store every time and buys a plant?
That's core.
That's core.
I'm like slowly, like Haley is slowly, I'm drawing her in.
She's corrupting.
I'll get a message every now and then and be like, hey, I bought this today. How do I take care of it? What do I do for this? And I'm like,
you're like, oh, evil laugh.
Like I Mr. Burns it, you know, like I said, eh.
And I'm like, oh no! Oh, fits. That absolutely fits. Meryl Pierce is my publisher, and she got into succulents. And she goes to the store. Oh, my little plant babies! Look, my babies are having babies. And she takes pictures like pets. And oh, look! And oh, they're so cute.
My succulent is the bane of my existence. Sometimes it's great. Other times it's like, no, we're going to throw a fit and try to die. And I'm like, no. Behave.
My plant, I love you. That's a hilarious thing to me. I'm not a mother of plant babies. That requires, I have an aloe vera. Does that count? We water it twice a year, maybe, when we remember, when it's looking skinny, you know? But anyways, back to the plant string. collaborating, you got to find the right kind of person. When you find the right kind of person to collaborate with, you just absolutely connect and are able, you know, it's like half the story is in the other person's head sometimes. And they just get the flow and whatever. But sometimes that doesn't, you know, that doesn't work for everybody. So I think it's really neat that you guys, are there ever areas where you clash? You're like, no, that's not how I wanted. Oh, you're laughing. That's not how I wanted that to go. That's not the kind of person that, you know. What are some of the areas where you've really clashed?
We've actually been really lucky, and I tell other people that if it weren't for her, I would not be able to work well with anybody. She's the only person I can work well with, because normally I'm very controlling and like, this is my book, it's going this way, you're not going to mess with it. But because we kind of ride the same wavelength, we don't really have a lot of fighting.
Oh, that's wonderful.
I was going to say, I don't think that there's ever been, like, anything major. I mean, normally it's one person sees the other side, I guess. So, like, I feel like we kind of present our cases when it comes to stuff like that. And so, like, here's, you know, the reasons that I think this should happen, or here's the reasons I think this should happen. And I feel like it kind of works itself out.
So you've never had, like, a character or something that was, like, stubborn or went a different way with something and was stubborn about something that gave you, you're like, well, I want him to be this way, or I want to be this way. I have, let's put it this way, I like romance for certain aspects of romance. I like my heroes to be a certain way, and my female, you know, my main characters to be a certain way. My bad guys, they can be anything. I'm pretty free with however they want to go. But there's a certain kind of trope in romance that I love and that is easy for me to write, and I don't want to mess with it. I don't want to introduce a love triangle anywhere ever. I don't want to deal with that. I'm not there yet. I don't know, but it's not my thing. And I've had, why don't you take this? I'm not. So have you ever had anything like that where one of you want to, how about we do this and cause this conflict? And the other person was like, nah, that's not where we want to go with this. Do you think that would happen, or you just kind of jive on your, because I've looked at your series, you guys, your series talk about diversity. I'm laughing because of the alien, you know, it's the alien, when you add in like the alien fantasy thing, you get to blow diversity out of the water. It's not a thing. It just becomes this creative adventure of relating to kind of new aspects of people that are humanoid-ish. And I love that about being able to play with fantasy. But you have this massive array of diverse characters. So have you ever had anything like that? Or did you just, you just mesh so much, it's not been a thing?
I think we kind of let our characters control it, don't we? Like,
I think for the most part, I mean, there have been some times, I think, like, more early on, where we had thought about introducing some plot point. And then after talking about it, though, we kind of felt like it wasn't right for our characters. Like, we didn't feel like they would have participated in something quite like that. So we ended up changing it. But I don't think we've ever, like, really disagreed. I feel like normally we have the same sense of the character. And, like, we'll talk about them. We'll be like, I don't think Ocean would do this. You know, he's just very this, this, and this. This is not Bryn. Bryn would not be okay with this. you're right. Okay.
I feel like it also helps that a lot of our heroines are based off of people we know. So, like, Amanda in Ecstasy from the Deep was Amanda. June in Kept from the Deep was Amanda's best friend, June, who is a Filipina. So we were able to really go into her culture because we knew her. You know, and then Sam from Press of Desire is S.J. Sanders.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I'm really close friends with her in real life, so.
Oh, tell her hi. I love her. I love what she's done for fantasy and for fantasy romance and for, I love her books.
She's actually going to be at my house tomorrow, so.
Oh, good. Tell her she should come on an interview. Yeah, that's really cool. I've never purposely put anybody I know in a book, but that doesn't mean their traits don't show up. When you are designing a character and kind of designing what they're going to look like in their species and everything, do you have how much does your covers are amazing. So I want to know where the cover art and that kind of figuring out what your character is going to look like connect. Does most of, and SJ, she actually does a lot of her own art, doesn't she? I've seen her like producing, you know, and she's so talented. But anyway,
she did on the Monsterly Yours series, but yeah, Sam does all of her art like she does ours.
Okay, so
yeah, I know in like her first ones, she was doing the covers.
She's still quite talented. I know she, yeah.
She does. Yeah, I love when she does her own little artwork. I love getting to see like the characters the way that she sees them.
Yeah.
It's really nice.
It is. And she's talented enough that you, when she posts them, I haven't seen as many lately, actually. But she's also writing a lot faster lately. I can't keep up.
She's doing Sam's covers lately. So the drawn ones lately are Sam's. So the Monsterly Yours, the original covers were hers. But she's slowly getting those also changed with Sam's art.
So as you work with Sam, how does that develop your characters? Does that change them or affect them, having being able to see them visually? Or are they drawn to your ideas?
It's to our specifications.
Okay.
So we have two separate artists. We have Sam Griffin, who does the Venora Mate series, The Guardians of Ennor, the one we're currently working on, which is Weaving Fate. And then she's also redoing the Breasts of Desire cover because that was by somebody who I just needed the cover because my cover artist wasn't available. And then Queen of Twilight is done by Donna Zilger. Is that how, I can't remember if that's how her last name's pronounced. I apologize, Donna. I love you. but she does those for us. So she does the Darmates for us. And with her, we had thought about getting photo manipulation, and we were told by somebody who does those covers that it was too complicated just because of all the colors. So getting her to do our Dar, which are the very, very colorful ones with the quills,
yes,
was amazing because I felt like I was not going to be able to describe that well to anybody the way we see them. And just seeing them come to life is amazing in and of itself. But we'll take pictures of like things that we feel like they look like. So for instance, for the Dar, I took an Echidna. I can't say.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The little kind of, yeah, I know that it's gotta be an Australian animal, isn't it? Because they all are.
Yeah.
So the quills and the quill pattern came from that. And then the Elo, which is the glowing things on their shoulders, is actually part of a plant. Do you remember what kind of plant it is, Amanda?
I cannot. I want to say it's some kind of fungus because I feel like we have an affinity for fungi. And they're so cute. And
I think it's Ogre's Ear Jade, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah. Yep. I actually have one. I don't know why I don't remember that, but yeah.
Yeah. So it's like... It's that, or also the, it also looks like, it's jade, and this one looks like a succulent that also kind of looks like them, a January succulent. So we got them from plants, believe it or not.
That's really
And then
cool.
The colors we just went with, we wanted very bright colors because they have no sun. It's all dark all the time. So they literally glow, you know. And their world glows. So it's really, we got into those with Sam and the Venora Mates. I had pictures where I was like, okay, I like this tail, but I want this type of body and I want these stripes on them, but they're kind of like barnacles because they're aquatic. So I want it to not just be glowing stripes, but you know, some texture to it, which is how she came up with their fishori, which is the glowing stripes. They're bioluminescent. And then for the Grutex, I had a very specific picture that I really liked. And I was like, I want you to take this guy and make him hot. I want six eyes. The first one for Ecstasy, he had four eyes because he's a hybrid. So he's not full Grutex. But I was like, the regular Grutex have six eyes. They're red eyes. Normally, if they're not red eyes, they're considered to have a birth defect. which is very bad in their culture. So they're not allowed to be warriors if they have a birth defect because they're trying to create super soldiers. They're all test tube babies, and that's why they all look alike, is because they're to those specifications.
Mm-hmm.
And then they have the chitin, and I'm like, and the top of his head looks like a dragon fruit, a bunch of spikes. And I'm like, so it's kind of like a xenomorph with a dragon fruit head and six eyes. And
I love it.
And we gave her the description we had in the book. And we're like, this is what we have written. Just make sure it has these things on it.
And, I'm honestly so grateful that Sam is really, really good at like taking everything that Haley throws at her and making it into like a for real thing, because I have such a hard time imagining those things.
Putting it all together. And so then when you see the final picture.
Yeah, my brain does not process the images that way. And so it's so nice when Sam gives us even just like the first little rough draft. I'm like, I see it. I get it. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Oh, I see it so much better now.
I can clearly now.
I'm not sure if you've seen our newest cover, but Weaving Fate. He's actually based off of a zebra jumping spider. We didn't want to make him a spider alien, so we made him spider inspired. So he's got spider the eight eyes. He's got two tails, and each tail they shoot out webs from the end. He has four arms. And he's fuzzy. He's fuzzy. And it's great. And then he can shift into this other form, which is his guardian form, which is very canine, but like hard and like ridges on its back. And it's got these glowing things coming off of its head and a stinger with like three stinger parts. And it actually featured in our book, Kept from the Deep, back in January, this species. And it's a spinoff of the Venora Mates series.
So that brings me to my next question. How have you tackled the details of writing a series in shared worlds with shared kind of cultures and spin-off cultures? How have you kept track of that? How have you tackled that? What have you learned most from doing that? What would be your biggest tip, I guess? Because I'm such a pantser, I tend to write things out and then I forget to write things down and then I go back later and oh my gosh, it's just hell. I need to be better organized. That would be what I would tell somebody. You got to be organized if you're going to write a big world. Just write it down, categorize it, and take the time to do it, because it's as important as getting your words for the day. But I'm still bad at it. So, I mean, what would be your, because you have several books out, so what would be your biggest thing that you have learned through that process of keeping it organized and keeping it straight?
So the first book, we didn't take any notes.
Yeah.
And we learned our lesson.
Horrible mistake.
You learned.
Horrible. We had to go through and reread Ecstasy from the Deep so many times because we were like, hold on, wait, what did we say? Oh my gosh, wait, hold on. And we would have to go back through and just like comb through the book and like mark in docs, like put this in the notes.
And it's every and little thing. It's what they drink. It's what they eat. It's the plant that is outside the house. It's,
definitely the names of the plants or the descriptions of like the fruit that they were eating. And we were like, oh my gosh, we didn't write any of this down.
We started a glossary and species and oh God, what was it? World notes. So like the Venora mates, they have their own world notes of like what the planet looks like, what their culture is like,
their religions. Yeah.
Yes. Our editor.
Do you use a program? Do you use a program or a book, or are you just developing it all on your own?
We do it on docs. Everything is on docs.
We write our own stuff.
We kind of have like, I don't know. I think it's funny because like it's very normal for us, but we have like our colors. So like, I have a color, a specific color, that I write in, and Haley has a specific color she writes in.
So you can always tell which of us, before it gets changed, has written something in the notes.
Uh-huh.
And so it's just, we go through and we'll be like,
oh, I write in red because she hates red.
It's motivation for me to change it.
She writes in light magenta. And then when I go over it again after she's gone over it, I turn it all black.
There you go.
So, like, we've had to be very, like, specific. And, like, I feel like I'm kind of bad at it, but at least Haley comes back through after I've done, like, the second draft, and she'll be like, did you put this in the notes? I see that you added someone's name. Did you put this in the notes? I see that you named this tree. Did you put it in the notes?
I highlight and comment. Put in
the notes. Oh, gosh. I need you in my life. I need you. I need someone who will.
We learned the hard way.
Oh, me too, but I'm still suffering. I'm still, because I wrote my first three books I wrote, I wasn't even thinking. I thought nobody would read them. I thought, you know, da, 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 da. And I didn't think I'd publish. And I didn't, was just writing for me. And I was just like, I'm just going to do this. And oh, this is fun. And then I'm done. And then I wasn't. And I'm still, a year later, I'm still suffering.
That's kind of how we went. We were like, nobody's going to read this. We're writing this for ourselves. We want to get it out of our heads. We're doing this for fun. And then we released, and every single book we've released has gotten an orange tag on Amazon. And I was like, oh my God. And everybody's like, you should be so happy. And I'm like, oh no, I'm terrified.
I write my
own personal experiences in my books. I am terrified to people to know me this intimately.
Oh my goodness. I so identify. I'm not going to say, yeah, very much. Like, nobody I know can ever read this. Never. It's just strangers. It's fine. And, you know, my audience, I figured, would be all women. And then men I know read some of my stuff. And I'm like, wait, no, what? Stop. Yes. No, you're not my target audience.
You're not allowed.
We have a lot of male readers.
I know. I bet. And so has that affected your write? You're just still writing the, I'm sure, the way you know you want to write. But it is a little bit when your book steps out of your target audience, who you think might read it. Did it surprise you? Did it? You're like,
So we write what we like to call plot heavy romance. So we'll have the smut scenes, but they tend to be towards the end or only 2 to 3. But then it's like 4K each.
Yeah.
But like the rest of it is all plot driven. So you're getting the romance. There's going through stuff together though. So there's an overarching plot. There's an overarching series plot as well. So not only do you have the romance plot, but we have this huge plot for the series itself. So each book adds to that plot. Like our editor said, our books are very, very complex. And each action has a meaning, you know? And so to have me go viral on TikTok, and I've got 48,000 followers now.
And oh, wow! Congrats.
I have a lot of men who started reading our books, and we would get these messages on there saying, oh my God, I'm so surprised I actually liked this. And I would, you know, use my privileges of, you know, having a great chest. Let's be real here. That's where I got my followers from. And the fact that I could go live to read from our books and capture them. And they'd be like, wait, you're done? You're not reading anymore? And I'm like, well, if you want to read more, go buy my book.
Oh, there you go. Perfect. Perfect. I tried to read from one of my books. I got banned in 2 minutes. Anyways. Okay. I guess it was the wrong part.
I always have to skip words and I'm like, a word I cannot use, but is also called a peach.
You know, what's funny is because I was describing a cock, right? But I don't use a lot of the really normal other words. But apparently it was really clear what I was describing.
They said, we know what you're talking about.
Yeah, and of course it is a megaverse, and so there's a little bit of, you know, but I don't think I made it to the inside. And the book, the book I was reading from was, it's really heavy with that kind of stuff. It just, my other books aren't quite as much, but that one just was. And I thought, I'm going to have to pick a different selection next time. But
yeah, we specifically do not go for smut scenes. We go for, let me get you hooked into this world.
Yeah, you have your plot. But all the women right now, I don't know. Spicy book talk is really big, don't you think? I think that they want to know what, and they are, I don't want to say they're necessarily following their kinks, because it's not that limited, but they want to know what they're getting in the packaging a little bit, I think. And so that's what my goal is, to kind of explain what the pack, you know, what was behind the packaging, but I could.
We definitely had a lot of people give us bad reviews for inserting our kinks into our books.
Oh, yeah.
And we hadn't even touched the surface.
Yeah, like high five. Yeah, I'm like, high five.
Yes.
High five for the bad kinks. But yeah. Yeah.
I was like, I haven't even gotten into the deep part of my kinks. Like, you're just, you know, complaining about a spanking and telling her what she asked for.
I know that the character asked for this, but I don't think that that was okay. I don't think she liked that.
Men aren't supposed to ever hurt women. You said they wouldn't hurt women, but she liked it.
Have you really got? I try to, you know. People talk about, are warning labels effective? I'm like, yes, because if nothing else, they tell the reader what is in the book that they may not like. I don't think, you know.
They're not effective for us.
Oh, they don't even work. You know, sometimes I'm like, did you read that? I was like, you know, sex drenched and violence. That means.
Right.
I'm not joking about the violence. I mean, really.
Right.
It often happens in the same scene, not to the same people, but right.
But they're there together.
Yeah, they're there together having a moment.
Right, exactly. So, I feel like ours, we've detailed like some things. We've been like, hey, like we've even specified where something was. In what chapter, what parts of that chapter you could skip. And we still had people complain that they didn't know it was there.
Yeah, we had it, the book, literally, we have it set, because she formats our books on vellum. We have it set to open to the warning. Okay, the very first page, it opens up to the warning, and it says, this book contains dark themes that may not be suitable for all readers. As survivors of rape and sexual assault, Haley and Amanda understand that these subjects are difficult to read about. Breath of Desire contains an instance of sexual assault against the heroine, as well as the rape, not described, non-specific, of a secondary character. For those who may be sensitive to the subject matter, or simply do not wish to read it, please avoid the ending of chapter 27 and the beginning of chapter 28. And we still get people who say there was not enough warning.
Oh, gosh, you even told. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, you just got to scratch your head. I just, they're coming to read a book. Why wouldn't they read the
about the warning? Right, right.
You're going to read the book, so just take a couple moments to, you know.
Mm-hmm. But and like you said, a note to our readers, so it's specifically for you.
I'm like, please pay attention. This may not be your cup of tea. Oh, yeah. No. And I guess it really, I don't try not to let those kind of reviews, you know, go to heart. If they didn't matter so much on something like Amazon, where that one star can bring your book down in the rankings, mm-hmm. and, you know, it can have an overall sales effect. It's and the one other ones that are like that are a little bit like, you know, I didn't know this book had aliens in it, you know, that they're reopening a book that is obviously, and they're like surprised still, and then they rate it that way and then give you that one star, you know, I didn't know this book had sex in it, and you already, you know, it's a romance, you know, it's kind of that kind of thing.
The best review the other day we got was somebody complaining that They loved the book. It was a great book. But they don't like poly books. They like monogamous books. I'm like, so the two dudes on the cover didn't tell you. The board with three people tell you. The bold part under the blurb that says this is a MMF romance didn't tell you.
Like, I still think one of my favorites was that Gulzar was too alien.
They didn't realize
he was going to be too alien. And it's like, but Gulzar and Ocean are on the cover. I could understand if they were like, wow, Amanda was so human, I had no idea. She's not on the cover. Okay, I could give you a pass. But Gulzar is on the cover. And it was just like she was very surprised by the fact that he was very alien in description, in the book. Not on the cover, but in the book. And so that one was fun. That was
You just gotta scratch your head, and that they have so much power. Kind of, that's what really. But that's not their problem. That's a Zahn problem, and we're not gonna go there because we can talk about that for hours.
Yes. I really wouldn't care if Zahn wasn't, you know, the way it is.
Yeah, I mean, it's a total Zahn problem. It has, you know, the crazy people and the people out there who are like that, they exist, and we, you know, whatever, we can deal with that. But if it, yeah, it's a Zahn problem. But that's so funny that you got those. I'm, you know, high five for that too. I just, we're a club, you know. The readers who like have no, the cover is right there, too alien. Oh, Lord. Oh, that makes me laugh.
How dare we?
And your covers are so beautiful, too. They're pretty obvious. I can't even. And they're all kind of cuddled together. You know, it's not like they're standing, looking, the scary alien on the hill, you know. No.
Yes, yes. He's not like in the background, like maybe he's the villain.
Yeah, no.
He's like up in front, like, yeah, I'm here to wreck stuff. And, but, you know, maybe it's a little surprising.
Yeah, the little surprises that come out of nowhere.
Just out of nowhere, from the covers of books, you know.
Oh, gosh. So how
I don't know. I think it totally may be the BP. That might be what's, you know, turning them off.
It's probably the peen, honestly. Probably the most shocking part, like a bee peen, because you know that when people read that, they were like, you know, I'm a Google bee peen. And then they saw it, and it's interesting. I'm sorry that people had to Google that, but it's, I don't know. I think that it's probably a fun little surprise. And be like, I wonder what that actually looks like. And
surprise. Brandon, I dare you, go Google it and come back and tell us what you thought.
So how long I totally did not send it to her. It wasn't me.
So how long have you guys been writing together? When was the from the first book to now, how long have you been working together?
Since October 2nd of 2019.
You are so prolific. Oh my gosh.
We have it written down. It's memorialized, like, in Facebook or something.
Dun, dun, dun. Yeah, that's amazing. That's very cool. That's really amazing.
On our Octavia core account, it's set as our birthday.
I love it.
I'm just really disappointed that you didn't have the exact time, Haley.
Oh, I'm dear. So that sorry.
Was, like, down to the minutes and the hours. What?
I mean, I really should. I should have that time.
So what have you learned the most about, you know, indie publishing and self-publishing and through since October of 2019? What would you tell a writer starting out? I know you guys are really supportive of other writers. So when they come to you and say, I've written a book. Is there anything I should know? What would you tell them?
Stay away from Goodreads. stay away from Goodreads. Yeah, Goodreads does not exist.
Look at it. Don't breathe the same air as a Goodreads account. Just don't.
I know some people will be like, oh, you need to be a Goodreads author and you need to be active and you need to do all that. Don't. Stay away from it. Stay away from it. It will make you want to throw in the hat and never write again. Stay away from it.
I mean, I made a group, but actually I give it to other moderators, so we're good. But and now they take care of it and they don't even say we want to do this. They just do it. And I'm like, oh yay. I'm actually really happy about that. They're really great. See? They're great readers and moderators, and I don't know what's, if somebody's saying something negative or what, I have no clue.
Right.
I hardly have any time to take care of it. But I wanted there wasn't an Omegaverse group on there or anything like that. So I wanted to get one started, and I was so thankful when somebody else came. I didn't have to, you know, it's like, yay. And now they just
hear you. Bye.
Yeah, exactly. I so feel like that. I'm like, bye. Yay. I'm here if you need me, but you know, I might drop a link every now and then. But other than that, it's this way. I'm not playing fair. I'm not doing, you know, everybody can be in there and that's great. And everybody can have their opinions and they can like what they like. And, you know, and that's great. It's all for readers, not me. Bye.
And see, here's the thing. Like when you go on there, and I know a lot of people are going to do it anyways. I've done it. It's me. Hi.
She does it all the time.
When you go on there and you get these negative reviews and they'll be tearing your book apart and you're like, I don't understand. None of this was in my book. What are you talking about? How could you have read it this way? I don't understand. But if you go to their profile and you just look at their reviews, 9 times out of 10, those reviews, they're going to have nothing but negative reviews on their account. And
how
so a
true
lot of
is
these
that?
People just mm-hmm. do this because they want other people to see them giving these
yeah.
negative reviews.
Yes.
It gives them a sense of power. You
it's
know?
Actually,
so,
it's the same on Amazon too. Somebody gave me a horrible review the other day. And so I looked them up and they're like 1 star, even the books they like, 3 stars, you know,
right.
you know, 1 star, 1 star. You
I've
know,
seen and, somebody say 4 stars and then they're like star rating was 2 stars. And I was like, what?
You would understand. Yeah, yeah, exactly. This was a great book. 3 stars, 2 stars. I'm like, what?
Right.
I know that they tell you that 3 stars is good rating, but in reality it isn't. And a lot of readers do not understand that. In Amazon's yeah. eyes, in Goodreads' eyes, 3 stars is not a good rating. It
no,
isn't.
It's not.
And
it's
they
not.
Lie to you when they tell you that it is. You know,
yep.
1 star, 2 stars, absolutely hated it, would not recommend this book. A 3 star is basically that neutral ground, or at least it should
it's
be.
Like, meh.
You know, and then it's
right,
like, you know,
right.
meh. I don't really care for this book. I don't really like it. Don't really hate it. It's meh. You know,
yeah.
and then 4 and 5 stars is, yes, this was a good book. I liked this book. If you had stuff you didn't like, but you still liked the book, 4 stars is where you want to go, because you're not
yep.
bringing down that Amazon, that rating for that author.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. and that's what a lot of people don't realize, because 3 stars, I have watched and got 1 3-star, and I had a lot of really positive ratings, and that 1 3-star brought it down a ton.
Seriously.
And
it totally
so
does.
Surprising.
I've seen it happen to my last book. It got a couple more. It didn't have any three. It got a, I think it has 1 3-1-1 star. But and a couple 3 stars, and it's brought it down. It had a 5, a 4.5, you know, almost 5-star rating, and it's like now it's very mm-hmm. firm 4-star rating, which, you know, on Amazon that makes a massive difference. It mm-hmm. on Goodreads, people, I've heard readers say on Goodreads they're more real, because it doesn't some readers who are really conscientious will be a little bit more, you know, harsh on and exacting on their ratings. But on Amazon, at least they understand, you know, yes, this can affect an author's bottom line. I'm still going to be honest, but I'm going to be careful how it started. It's those people who are just cruel for no point, you know.
Just, right.
You know, or, you know, all the other stuff that can happen. But I just wanted to, it is an important thing for, there are some, I've TikToks, don't worry about the reviews. Reviews are for readers. Reviews are for readers. They are. They also sell books.
No.
They also,
no.
They also sell books.
We go to a restaurant, right?
Yeah.
And we rate the restaurant. Is it just for people who eat there, or is it also for the restaurant itself? It's for the restaurant.
They do matter.
So I hate when people are like, oh, reviews are for readers. No. They're for both. Because when you look at this is your business.
Yep.
It doesn't matter that they're books and this is entertainment. It's still your business. Just like movie reviews. They're not just for people consuming it. You know, they'll decide if they're going to continue with the series or not based off of reviews. And even though we're indies, we are still, you know, this is our business. And I can tell you something. We had 20 people who read through Ecstasy from the Deep, including, you know, editor and everything. Nobody caught the plot hole that's in it, right?
Oh my gosh.
I had 150 reviews. One person caught it. One bad review. Had I not read that review, I would not have been able to fix that plot hole in book two.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Sometimes as long as they're not, I wish I could have that person. I'm like, would you be on my, you know, don't be mean to me, but I need somebody who's a little bit more critical on my team. Because, yeah, I know what you're saying there. It's like, that didn't make sense. You know, you're communicating with your words and you want to communicate to the widest audience possible. And when your words are not cleanly communicating to that audience, you're like, oh, what did I do wrong?
You know, and I feel like there was so much action. That's why people missed it. You know, there was so much action in the scene. I missed it. And I read over that document, what, Amanda, at least 50 times?
Oh, well, it's in your head. Once it lives in your head, you know.
You kind of skim over things because you think, oh, I've read this before. I know what's in this scene.
It's funny though, because when I took away from it, because I was rereading Ecstasy, because we were writing Kept, and we had went books in between, because we wrote Queen of Twilight, then we wrote the full-length version of Ecstasy, because Ecstasy came out in a short-length version first. And then we wrote Breaths of Desire, and the full-length version, because the short one we wrote at the same time as Queen of Twilight. So we were writing... We had come back to write Kept because somebody told us that we needed to finish our series because we were creating all these firsts in the series. And I was like, you're right. So I went to write Kept and I was like, I'm going to reread Ecstasy because they kind of happen at the same time. And I need to make sure sure that this all happens the right way it happens. And I'm rereading it and I'm, you know, highlighting for notes of, okay, we need this in this book. We need to write this down in the notes, This is world notes. This is, this needs to go in the glossary because we keep glossaries with pronunciation guides and what the word means. And we put those in our books. So, you know, I was like, okay, we need to do all this. And then I come across the scene and I remember that person saying something when I read it myself. And I was like, oh God, they're right. Because I was like, no, they did that. Well, the problem was me and Amanda talked about them doing it. We never wrote it in there.
Oh no.
I feel like we do that a lot. Luckily, I feel like we catch them before it even goes to our alphas. But it was definitely part of the learning process with that one. And it was such a small thing and you wouldn't think it would make like really a terrible amount of difference. It was such a weird thing. And I was like, no, we absolutely said that. And I mean, I went back through and I was like, oh my gosh. You're both
right. Well, it's like when we wrote the short story of Ecstasy, we released it in an anthology and everything. Nobody said anything. We go to rewrite the full-length version.
That's my favorite one, though. That's like my absolute favorite.
Go ahead and tell her what you found, Amanda.
There's this scene where Amanda's brought Ocean back after he's been injured. And she's like, he's aquatic. I should put him in a bathtub. And originally, or in the
original, we had him in the bed originally.
Right. We put him in the bed, and then we changed it to, okay, no, he should go in a bathtub. You know, just, it's kind of funny. We'll put him in the bathtub.
And especially since she had aquatic salt.
Oh,
right. So aquarium. She's got, like, aquarium salt. And she's like, I should, you know, he needs this. He was in the ocean. And so she's left him in there, and he wakes up and he's listening to her have this conversation with her friend June. And he throws off the blanket. And I thought, why does he have a blanket in the bathtub? Yeah. And I remember messaging Haley.
That's so mean. And I was like, oh my gosh.
I was like, did we mean to leave the blanket on him in the bathtub? And she's like, we didn't. What?
And
I'm like sitting here, I'm like, it's in the short story, which is in the anthology.
It's in published there. It was printed. In a book.
It's already out there. People own this. And it was like, we can't take it back.
Print. It's in print.
We can't take this back. So, like, it's one of my favorite things on the shelf now. And, like, I have it highlighted in the book. And this is my favorite scene of the short stories, where he throws the blanket off of him to get out of the bathtub.
Oh, that's amazing. Oh, I feel a kinship here, because yeah. I need to be better at all of this. I love writing stories, but my craft is not, I'm not a perfectionist, and I think it shows.
Oh God, I've seen Tiffany Roberts, their outlines, and it's like pages for days, and I'm like, oh, we so are failing at this. when we say a loose outline, I mean like a couple of sentences per chapter of like, okay, this, and this. A smut chapter is literally just smut. and then we'll have like empty chapters of, we have no idea what's going to happen here, but we'll know when we get there.
Yeah, we don't know when we get there. Oh my gosh, I so feel this. I need a type A personality in my life. Okay. someone's going to read from one of your books. I would love that.
So we have two things that we're having highlighted. We're going to read a short passage from the one we're currently writing. And then I'm going to read the prologue of Awoken, since that was our newest release. So Amanda's going to read the short chapter. Short.
You can do it. Tell
my voice.
Just breathe. You're going to be fine. Right.
You would think, like, years of drama, this would be much easier. It's not. It's much harder. Okay, so this is actually chapter 3. Of Weaving Fate. And this is Zahir's chapter. We don't have a blurb for Weaving Fate.
We have yet. A line.
So,
we have a line.
Yeah, we have a little, like, you know, eye catcher, but we don't have any blurb. So so this is Zahir's chapter. If Zahir could say one thing about this creature, it was that she was a determined little thing. He'd sat awake most of the night, watching her toss and turn on the floor of the outpost. But now she was still, her bound hands propped beneath her cheek as she snored softly. With those alarmingly odd eyes of hers closed, Zahir had taken some time to study her, trying his best to see what it was his guardian saw. It was fascinated by her, enamored by the tiny brown flecks that covered her exposed skin and the softness of her tangled hair. She'd seemed afraid of him when he'd returned to the outpost, and if the female had any sense of self-preservation, then she would continue to be cautious. In his guardian form, Zahir could easily crush her soft body in his jaws. No! Just the thought of any harm coming to her made his beast furious, and that drove him crazy. What was it about this outsider in particular that made his guardian react like this? There had been two other females in that group, but neither of them caused this protectiveness to well up within him. Yes, the female's mental voice was pleasant, he would give his beast that. But everything else about her was strange and repulsive. Unlike Kunkili females, this outsider's body was covered in the finest smattering of fur he'd ever seen. Her nose protruded too far, her eyes were eerily multicolored, and her ears were short and rounded at the top. The majority of her teeth were blunt, with the exception of maybe a couple pointed but incredibly dull fangs. This little female lacked all of the beauty of their females, and still his guardian was practically clawing out of his skin just to touch her. When he'd come across her in the forest, Zaheer had no choice but to see her through his beast's eyes. But now, back in his true form, he was faced with just how hideous this creature was. "Not hideous," his guardian protested. "Beautiful. Ours." Zaheer's lip curled in disgust, and he dug his fingers into his thighs to keep himself grounded. He doubted very much this female would even be able to fight for a place in his path. Weak, fearful. It was written all over her face, and it repulsed him. So why then, when she looked at him, did Zaheer feel the warmth of the sun warming him? Why did his body tremble and his thoughts go fuzzy when he breathed in her scent? When his fingers brushed over her smooth skin, Zaheer's heart had raced so hard and so fast that he feared he might drop dead at her feet. The fur covering his torso rippled, and without looking down, Zaheer knew patches of dark shimmering skin were appearing. "Mine," his guardian growled. Zaheer glanced toward the female, afraid she might hear him, but she remained asleep. "I want, I need," his guardian, or his beast whined. Without realizing what he was doing, Zaheer pushed away from the wall he propped himself against and crawled toward the female, his movements silent. He stopped in front of her, his head tilting as he watched the rise and fall of her chest. "Beautiful. Mine. Ours." Zaheer blinked at the desperation and longing in his guardian's voice. And just before his fingers could make contact with her skin, he jerked away. Gods above, if he didn't regain control of his guardian, he was going to cross lines that could lead him to damnation and ruin. "My vows are sacred," he said to the quiet room. "I spoke those vows before my Alpha, my gods, and the High Priest. I am honor-bound to keep them." Celibacy was the price the Chosen paid for the honor of housing a guardian. Up until this moment, Zaheer hadn't considered this to be much of a sacrifice. But the tightness in his chest when he looked down at the alien female gave him pause. As if sensing his presence, the alien stirred, her lids fluttering open to reveal the rich brown color in the center of her eyes. She was looking at him, and he wished desperately that she would close them again. A smile took the corners of her lips, but it quickly disappeared the moment she attempted to move her arms and legs. "Seriously? How long are you going to keep me tied up?" Her voice barely registered in his mind before his guardian was surging up within him, clawing its way to the surface. "Mark her. No one will dare to touch her then." His guardian had clearly gone mad. No one would touch the female because he wasn't going to let anyone get close enough. "Let her mark us with her scent so that no one can question who we belong to. We will wear it with pride," the beast hissed, excitement radiating along the bond. Zaheer did his best to mask his emotions as he tamped the guardian down. But with the way the alien's eyes moved over his face, he wasn't so sure he'd been successful. "She's ours. No, she is alien and ugly," Zaheer growled. His nostrils flared as he drew in a deep, calming breath. Well, it was meant to be calming. Her scent, the same one he'd tracked in the forest, filled his nose and lungs as the fur on the back of his neck lifted. It conjured up images of home, of the one he'd shared with his mother and father before the priest had come for him. She smelled of the flowery poju, the incense his mother burned as she sat in the floor, weaving her baskets while telling them stories of their ancestors and the creation of the forest. "Scenting her isn't wrong," the guardian whispered. He was already breaking the rules by staying in the dwelling alone with the female. But surely simply smelling like her didn't go against his vows. There were so many more important things he should be doing, like finding Tritek and listening to what he had to say about the priests. When Zahir returned to the village after leaving Evenoth with the other, or with the alien females, he'd been unable to locate his pack men. The priests reassured him the male would be returning soon, but it only stirred his suspicions. Tritek, however, was more than capable of taking care of himself, and if the priests were telling the truth and the male was simply completing a task, he would take Zahir's interference as a sign that his alpha had no faith in him. Instead, Zahir had made his way back to the outpost, unable to rest knowing she was out in the forest. Tendrils of excitement and fear wrapped around him as he closed the distance between them, contracting and squeezing Zahir's chest as he reached down to lift her into his lower set of arms. "Hey," she said out loud, reverting back to her inner voice. "Do not touch me. Put me down, you." The female went silent the moment he shifted her higher and nuzzled his face into her abdomen. A soft buzzing filled his ears, and her scent flooded him, and he breathed deep against the strange material she wore. Zahir could feel his guardian purring, something he'd never experienced before, and fought the urge to slide lower still to the place at the juncture of her legs where her scent was the most potent. That wasn't going to happen, not just because her legs were bound together, but because he had a feeling that would do more than lead him down, that path to ruin. What waited for him there would do so much more than merely break his vows. It would destroy them and him. "It would be worth it," his guardian purred. "Worth all the shame you are so scared of. This female is worth everything." Even if she really was worth it, Zahir doubted she would allow him. He frowned at the black material that covered her body, annoyed that his scent seemed to fade from it the moment he moved away. His guardian strained within him, desperate and hungry. With a growl of frustration, Zahir dropped her down into his lower arms, ignoring her gasp before burying his nose into the crook of her neck, where her pale flesh was flushed pink. She was soft and warm here, and before he could think better of it, Zahir slid his tongue up the column of her throat, committing the salty taste of her flesh to his memory. The sharp sting of her short nails, digging into his shoulders as she tightened her grip, had him pulling back. Did she also wish to mark him? The thought thrilled his guardian. Zahir carefully cradled the back of her head, bringing her close, so that he could rub her protruding nose along the underside of his jaw and into the tuft of fur around the base of his neck. The alien female made a throaty, muffled sound before pressing herself closer to his chest. He felt the warmth of her breath on his fur as she took over and allowed his eyelids to drop for just a moment as his guardian basked in the pleasure these simple touches brought. Even though he didn't see the appeal of this being, he was oddly satisfied. "Okay. Good spider guy, alien, spider." "What's a spider?" Zahir asked, cupping her face to hold her still when she tried to pull away. The female didn't respond, but she did pat him on the head as if he were some sort of animal looking for praise. "Is this some word of affection, or perhaps an insult?" It sounded like praise when she said it, but he'd watched mothers pat their pups like that when they were entertaining them. Why didn't she answer? As Alpha, Zahir wasn't accustomed to waiting for a response. His pack members trusted and confided in him. And here was this little alien female who made him feel all sorts of strange and forbidden things. Why did he care whether spider was an endearment or an insult? He'd hardly known her for more than a day, and already he was seeking her approval.
And there's that.
That has some really cute, wonderful moments. Both of them, you know, that was, thank you for reading that very much.
I do feel like you need a little bit of background, because I was like, as she's reading it, I'm like, oh shit, they don't know this. So like, Clara is deaf. She used to have a cochlear implant and it was taken from her. So she's completely deaf. She can't hear.
So even that she can't hear, but No, yes. I just like the spider kind of wet, you know, part.
But she can definitely, she is telepathic, so she can speak through people's minds.
Oh.
And typically they can speak back, but she can't understand him, and he refuses to speak to her in his mind because he's trying to learn more about her.
Oh, gosh.
And without her realizing that he can understand her. You know,
right, he's being a little sneaky.
That's still, what a cute interchange, though. I mean, there's a certain, you know, wonderful awkwardness. And then, of course, he's making it worse, you know, on top of everything else.
Right.
Such a man. Anyways, I'm sorry.
You're good.
Yeah, you may be a different species, but you're so male. I mean, come on.
Oh, what is this? Oh.
Okay.
I literally messaged a group, because we have a group on Facebook with other newer authors, and I messaged the group, and I was like, chapter 3 isn't too soon for her to be aroused by him, right? Not too soon. Right?
This is fine,
like,
isn't
no,
it?
No, please!
Because typically our couples don't go like this.
Yeah, yeah. I know sometimes your characters defy you completely.
She was just like, any attention. When they're in like, Rome.
They're like, right, watch right. out. Oh, yes, I'm ready. I'm, you know. Yeah, sometimes they just... and then they talk to you about it. I don't know what that's that weird feeling anyways of them. Can we now? You know, I'm ready. And they right. just keep ending up in situations.
And they keep pushing, like, oh my God, there's this scene in chapter 6 that we wrote. And they almost. And I'm like, I have to throw something at them. No, you can't. It's too early. Right. You've only known for a day. What are you doing?
Right. I know. Don't you feel like you've been writing and you're like on chapter 10, but really timeline wise, they've known each other for 2 days. But if for some reason in romance, especially if you know there's going to be spice, chapter 10, that makes it slow burn. 2 days, my head is screaming.
Uh-huh. Yeah, right, and we're just like, oh God, we should really have more days. But then I'm like, but this is being reality. Things happen very right. quick.
And yeah,
so it's like, oh my God. But then people are going to complain. They only know each other for 2 days, and it's like, yes.
Sorry, I don't think readers notice if you're establishing all this tension and action, and things are happening in those 2 days. Sometimes they feel like a couple weeks. I don't know, but maybe
it definitely feels like weeks for us, because like we're like, all right, and then we want this to happen, and then like one of us is like, wait, has it only been 1 day? I'm like, oh my gosh, really? Yes, okay, we have to remedy this.
We have to add a little time, you know.
We have to do something to skip forward a bit.
I'm not very good at that yet. I need to figure out, you know, I got complaints. They're like, why was the other character away from her most of the time of the book? Because it was the only way I could stretch it out. It's my first book. I'm like, they need time. She needs, actually, there's reasons why she needs time and they can't be together, even though they really right. want each other. So he had to leave. That was all. I sent him off on adventures and left her by herself. There was no other way. I had readers complain. I wish they would have had more time together. No, I couldn't.
It would have been too fast. You guys would have been like, it's an insta-love.
I know, and that's right, not what those right.
they're trying to do to me.
I wasn't building an insta-love. There were things, and you knew there were things, and I couldn't, what do you want me to do? Have them play chess? I don't know. I mean,
we tried to use that he's spider with Clara, and that didn't work because she's just like, well, I might as well.
She's like, you know what? She's like, look, I've been on the ship with the Grutex for a long time.
the fuzzy spider guy's kind of looking real good. he's looking comfortable. Okay.
Very soft. Doing good. He looks like, oh, yeah.
He's fuzzy.
Yeah. Ooh, yeah. Yeah. No, I like fuzzy. Anyways, are you going to continue your promo? We're going long.
I'm my bad. It's all my fault. I'm telling you.
I told you that this would be an easy interview. I told you we'd have fun. I'm having too great of a time. I'm like, yes, the issues of writing fantasy and sci-fi is, you know.
I will definitely say before reading this, there's a huge trigger warning for this chapter.
Okay, good to know.
So anybody who's listening, you got triggers. It may not be for you.
Yeah. That's fine. We're not safe for work, but yeah, trigger warnings, any kind of, you know, okay, you've been warned. Okay. This is for adults.
Yes. Okay. Prologue. Esme. Dense black fog clouded Esme's vision, and an inky darkness surrounded her as the hum of the cryopod filled her ears. She was going to sleep again. Only this time, she was on her way to Venora, and she was safe. Her heart pounded out a frantic rhythm, and she drew in a deep breath to calm herself. The last time she was pushed into a pod like this, she'd been drugged. The urge to slam her fists on the glass she knew shielded her, to scream and thrash until she was let out, was strong, but she suppressed it. What if you wake up in the lab? What if you wake up and he's there? No, not this time. The only Grutex on this ship had agreed to be the first one put into cryosleep, and while she didn't see the Vinium as being very trustworthy, she took comfort in the fact that he wasn't one of the scientists who had worked in the lab. The transition into sleep was so smooth that if she hadn't had these dreams already, she might not even have noticed her brain slipping. It was all too familiar. It was an all too familiar scene. One she was sure she would be forced to experience over and over for the rest of her life. Her baby kicked, and Esme rested her hand over the spot, rubbing at his or her little foot as it pushed against the inside of her womb. Whoever was in there was active and happy today, and despite her circumstances and those surrounding her pregnancy, it brought a smile to her face. The Kaya wasn't here, not in her cell or anywhere near the labs. The Grutex leader had discarded her long ago, but not before loaning her to a few of his most loyal followers. Her time with them had been nightmarish, but she was thankful that the Kaya had never used her in those ways. Esme wasn't sure she would have survived fulfilling his needs. Thinking back on her time with a certain loyal scientist made her hand tremble against her stomach, but she shut her eyes and forced his face out of her mind. She didn't want to relive the horror of what he'd done to her. But something wonderful had come from it, and she focused on that, feeling her baby twist and turn inside of her. This little one gave her hope for the future, even though she wasn't at all sure she would ever have one after this was over. For now, he or she distracted Esme from the pain of the past, and she poured all of her love into her baby. The dream shifted, and suddenly she felt her entire being list to one side as she found herself standing in the middle of her cell. No, she didn't want to see this. She didn't want to relive that day, but her brain could never seem to stop it from happening. Horrible, intense pain shot up the sides of her distended belly. Esme hissed as she stumbled forward, her hand slamming against the cold metal wall as her other hand clutched her stomach. There was pressure, so much of it. Something was wrong. She knew deep down that this wasn't right. The muscle beneath her palm tensed, tightening and becoming rock hard as she cried out into the quiet of the room. Warm liquid dripped down the inside of her thighs. Had her water broken? Oh God, no, it was too soon. With her teeth set against the pane, Esme yanked up her gown and ran her fingers over her skin. Her eyes widened and her knees went weak when she lifted her fingertips up and found them covered in bright red blood. Help, she called out, throwing herself forward and frantically pressing the button on the wall to the left of the door. I need help. Something's wrong. A wave of nausea rolled through her as more blood slid down her legs to the pool on the floor at her feet. Esme backed away, staring in horror at the sight. When the frame of the small bed bumped into the back of her legs, her knees gave out, and she collapsed onto the thin mattress as the world swam around her. Her whole body shuddered with the intensity of the pain, and she curled in on herself, wrapping her arms around her belly as she slipped into the welcoming arms of unconsciousness. The dream was morphing again into something more sinister as she opened her eyes and gazed around the cold hospital room. There was an emptiness in her body and her soul that wasn't right. The walls of the room were dark, a deep onyx color that she'd always found unnerving. He was there, standing at the side of her bed, reading over the projection on his forearm. "Where is my baby?" Her mouth was dry and her voice sounded raspy even to her ears. "Gone," he said, not bothering to even look her way. Esme's heart sank as she moved her hand over her belly. It was soft and far flatter than it had been when she lost consciousness. He was wrong. He had to be. Liar. Six red eyes cut to her face and the Grutex sneered. "I have no reason to lie. You failed." "What happened? What did you do with my baby?" "You're just as useless to me as you were to the Kaya," he spat. "You did this to yourself, female. You allowed your own body to terminate your pregnancy." "Disgusting." "No," Esme shook her head, her hand fisting against her stomach as tears blurred her vision. After everything she'd been through, after all of the torment and abuse, how could God, the universe, or whoever the fuck was out there take this miracle, the only thing holding her together, away from her? Life wasn't just unfair. It was cruel and heartless. "You're lying. You took my baby. You took..." The male moved fast, slamming his hand into the pillow beside her head. "Failure. Because of you, I can't even attempt another round. There's no womb left. Nothing to fill." "What?" Her voice cracked as she stared up at his face. "There was a rupture," he told her, as his hand moved from the pillow to circle her throat. "We could save neither the uterus nor the offspring by the time we were notified." His grip on her tightened, and he leaned close, his putrid breath wafting against her face. "You can't even do this one thing right, something your body was made for. I can't imagine what it must feel like to know that something within yourself caused this." The Grutex pressed his face to her temple and growled. "You took my offspring away from me, female." Esme shook her head. She tried to turn to him, to this monster who had done nothing but hurt her. He was the father of her child. Surely he could feel something, couldn't he? "Please, can I at least say goodbye?" Tears overflowed and slid down her skin. "I just want to say goodbye." The eerie sound of his laughter filled her ears as his claws dug into the soft flesh of her neck. "You don't deserve that. What you deserve is to be punished, to be shown no mercy for what you took." His tongue slipped out and this tip slithering over her skin as she shivered and did her best to keep from vomiting. "I won't discard you like the Kaya. I'll simply use your body until I can take another living incubator. And then I'll make you watch as she succeeds where you failed." Her body trembled and the fresh incision on her lower abdomen throbbed as he shoved her away. But Esme was numb. She didn't see the alien before her or hear any more of his vile words. Instead, she ached with the knowledge that she would never meet the little face, the little life that had been growing inside of her these last few weeks. There would never be the chance to put a face to those soft kicks and flutters she had spent her time counting, or know whether she had a son or a daughter. Her arms would never cradle her baby, and her fingers would never run over his or her face in amazement. It didn't matter what this alien said. Her baby wasn't his offspring or his failed experiment. Esme's baby belonged to her, and he would never be able to take those precious memories away from her. The lucid dream forced her to relive moments in time she had no wish to revisit. Like a fly on the wall, Esme watched as the Grutex scientist paraded her naked through the halls. The alien guards made crude comments and gestures, but her fellow humans, the ones in the cells she stumbled past, watched her with sad, sympathetic eyes. He threw her into one of the tiny cold cells before tossing the flimsy gown in her face. "I'll be back for you." She heard his warning, but her mind and body were too numb to respond. It no longer mattered what he did to her, or if she ever got out of this nightmare alive. because the only thing in the entire universe that meant anything to her had been ripped away. As the dream began to shift once more, Esme's breathing quickened. She knew what was coming. This was the reason she'd been hesitant to sleep most nights. An unfamiliar forest flashed before her eyes. Coral littered the ground, sticking up from the soil in spots around the strange black and red trees. She was running, but she couldn't recall the reason for her haste. Not until she heard the small, broken cry. It lanced through her heart, and she pushed her body to its limits, jumping over rocks and falling tree limbs as she hurried forward. The earth spun beneath her feet, and Esme squeezed her eyes closed as she lurched. There was a sudden weight in her arms, a comforting warmth against her breast that made her eyes fly open. Bright red eyes stared up at her, peering into her soul as a shimmering opalescent hand reached out to brush against the skin of her bare chest. A hungry little mouth rooted against her, and Esme shifted so that her nipple touched the corner of the baby's shimmering lips a moment before they latched. With the baby cradled against her, Esme ran her fingertips over the delicate mauve skin of a cheek and brow as a tiny tail wrapped around her wrist. Although the baby appeared to be mostly human, there were slender vines intermingled with the feather-soft hair and opalescent patches on the lips, chest, hands, and tail. Esme smiled down at the baby, who nursed happily, eyes half closed as her belly filled. Her baby was beautiful. Esme? The image began to fade as the weight in her arms lessened. No, she tried in vain to clutch her child to her, to keep her from disappearing as she always did, but nothing stopped it. Come on, Esme, time to wake up, someone was speaking to her, interrupting the peacefulness of a scene that would never be. I want to go back to sleep, she whispered, as the cool air of the ship washed over her body. When she finally pried her eyes open, Talisa's smiling face swam above her. The senator was kind, and out of all the survivors, Esme felt like Talisa judged her the least. Even so, Esme wanted nothing more than to shove the woman away and curl back up into the pot. We've all been out for a month, girl. Rise and shine. The last remnants of the dream faded from her mind, and Esme swallowed the lump that formed in her throat, pulling herself up inside of the cryopod. She could still feel the weight of her baby in her arms, the tiny mouth against her breast as she placed her hand against her suit-covered chest. There was no amount of sleeping or dreaming that would bring her child back. Esme knew that, but a part of her wanted to lie back down and close the lid to the cryopod. Maybe they would just forget her, and she could spend the rest of her life in that moment. Esme shook her head and dragged her legs over the side, closing her eyes against the dizziness. Her baby was gone. It was time for her to figure out how to get back to Earth and try to piece herself back together.
Oh, that's my life. Oh, wow. Yeah, that was a trigger warning. Wow. Beautifully written, though. Very full of feeling. Yeah, beautifully written. So that's the prologue to the next book that is...
Awoken from the Deep. It's our newest release.
Awoken book from the Deep. That's right. I want to say it so readers can be like, oh, yeah, okay. I think I might read this. I might. And it does it have a happy ending?
Yes.
Yay!
The story is about healing through the loss of child death. And she really gets pushed through having to deal with a lot of triggers real fast after just going through the loss of her child. And I can really see myself in Esme. I lost my child 8 years ago. And So I used my experience with her character a lot. The way she used to lash out at other people, and people hated her because of how she didn't trust anybody. And it's like, when you've been through the things she has, it's really hard to separate your trauma with other people because you see these red flags nobody else sees. Yes. And I really wanted to get into that, into what can cause a person to come off brash like this, to, you know, maybe even come off as a bitch, because we all have our own trauma and not all of us are dealing with it well, especially with it being so fresh for her. And
was it hard to write a character that outwardly is very, you know, acidic, but inwardly is very broken?
I mean, you had your experiences,
but you know how readers can be. They'll be like, I don't like, she's not likable. But, you know,
right.
you're trying to express both that she has a reason not to be likable. And maybe you've even experienced this and been through this before. So what was your biggest challenge?
I took 5 years of therapy to get me to not be like her. So
yeah.
I still struggle, especially, you know, the release date for this book was the 30th of May and the 15th of June was the 8-year anniversary of me losing the baby. And I can tell you right now, I cut off from a lot of people because I knew I was going to be bitchy. I was going to get mad about things I wouldn't normally get mad about just because I was mad at the world. I was mad that I couldn't even know what my child was. I couldn't, you know, hold my child. I have 3 living children. And so often people tell me, you know, oh, you have 3 beautiful kids. And I'm like, no, I have 4. I have 4. I have 4 kids. You know, yeah, my baby died, but it's still my baby.
Yeah.
It's still my child.
Yeah.
You know, and so I tell people all the time, I don't know what would be harder is losing a child that you've known and you've grown to love, or never being able to know your child and wondering what would they have been like?
Yeah.
You know, they both have their own things that make it really hard, you know?
Yeah.
And
exactly.
So when writing Esme in Kept from the Deep, she's very unlikable, very, you know, in Awoken from the Deep, you get to see what made her the way she was, because not only has she went through all these things, she's also an empath. So she's feeling other people's feelings of fear, of scared, of being angry. So it's not just her emotions that are driving all of these things.
Yeah.
And so
I think that's what makes her more likable.
Yes. Because when she gets away from it in this book, she's like cut off from everybody. She's only got Kai, the female alien, as well as Zuvri, the male alien of this story, for most of the book. And so she's cut off from everybody else. So she's more able to feel her own feelings. And Kai is able to teach her how to erect these walls and learn to break through the empath, you know. And so it really helps to have that and just be able to have her realize that some of the things she's doing aren't fair to, say, Zuvri, for instance. She realizes, in the end, I've, you know, kept myself away from this man and I've put all my trauma on him just because he looks like my attacker. And that's not fair of me. He's my mate just as much as Kai's my mate and I need to give him a chance, you know, and it's just a big story of healing. And she's not the only one. Each of them have their own trauma. Even Kai, who is mostly the rock of the relationship, has trauma. And they all have to help each other through it. And I feel like that's one of the biggest things when you go through a lot of things. I personally have CPTSD, so I'm speaking from personal experience, is having other people who've also been through those things to be like, how did you deal with this? How do I go through this? You know, before I had Amanda, and, you know, we share some things that we went through because our family is, you know, the best family. You know, before I had her and was able to talk to her about these things that I felt like I couldn't talk to other people about, it was like so hard for me because I would just start ghosting people and not talk to anybody when I was going through hard moments, rather than just being like, hey, I'm feeling like this. What can I do?
Yeah.
You know, like, how do I say this without coming off a bitch? Half the time, that's Amanda's the one who's reeling me in. So,
wow, and I love that your couples work out their relationship through their trauma in spite of their trauma. How real is that? I love that there's this very extremely real situations or feelings set in this fantasy kind of amazing world where, you know, you get the the cool alien sex too. How cool is that?
Yeah, part of my therapy, believe it or not, is writing. She wanted me to write because that was the way I could let out my emotions, and that's how I had been doing it most of my life, and being able to get through it was writing myself into characters. And so she wanted me to continue doing that. And then when Amanda decided to write with me, having her have some of, not all, but some of the same experiences as me helped, because it was like, okay, so you can help me get out what I'm trying to say and it not being like brash.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is one of the best things, is just being like, hey, so I want to write her this way. How do I do this without, you know, like making people mad?
Yeah, without making, right. I want to write her real, but you know that we all, sometimes the characters that reflect us the most are the ones we like the least. So we try to make them likable. I completely understand that. And yeah, hurting people hurt. It's just mm-hmm. kind of a fact of life. So how do you write a hurting character that's not, you know, that is more real than a, yeah. So that's neat that you took that on and are sharing that. And I totally understand. No family may ever read this. This is very me, you know, I don't want you connecting anything here. I don't want, no, I'm just going to put this out over here. This is not for you. This is for them. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, the author's note in the back of this book, I talked about my experience with losing the baby and like in detail. And I'm like, I hope the father of the baby never reads this. Spoke about how on the, you know, month anniversary, he beat the crap out of me. And that's how, you know, with her and the Grutex who had, you know, taken advantage of her, where he beat her as well. And I'm like, I was drawing a lot on my personal experiences. And we've had reviews that reflect that, where people are like, you can tell from reading this one of the authors, this was a very real experience. And I cried because I was like, yeah. I had another one who emailed me personally and was just talking about, thank you so much for writing about this. You know, I cried through the entire book, but it was a cathartic cry because she had lost her daughter's twin. And she's like, and I feel like this has really helped me heal a lot because I don't feel so alone anymore. And that's part of why I want to write books like this, where I write things that normally people wouldn't write, because I want to bring awareness that it's okay to feel like this. It's okay to go through these things. We do go through these things. And I hate that people always want to shove it underneath like, oh, it never happened. Like, no, it helps more when people recognize that I had another child than when people pretend they didn't exist. You know,
I saw a study actually somewhere that people who suffer with trauma, they and have medical difficulties because of the stress of their trauma, they heal much faster when they have somebody just sit down and listen and empathize with their trauma.
Yes, and that's why I write my books, because I'm like, even if just one person reads this and feels like, I'm not alone in feeling this way.
Yeah.
Then I feel like I've done my job. And to have multiple people come out about how, you know, this book really hit home for them is like, okay, so it was worth the 5 months of me crying and, you know, reliving my experiences and calling Amanda because I'm having, you know, nightmares again, and then releasing it right before the 8-year anniversary. I'm like, it was worth it because, you know, for me, I'm sure you heard me just reading, I'm choking up myself, you know, because it's very real for me. Now my uterus didn't rupture, but I did lose my child. I woke up in a pool of my own blood. I understand completely what she went through, you know? And so it's especially considering, you know, the doctors wouldn't even let me see my baby, nothing, you know, it was hard. And it's like, I didn't get to say goodbye because I wasn't far enough along for them to consider me saying goodbye, you know. And then I got, surprisingly, they wanted to medical waste. And I was like, I had to call a funeral home and I have my child in an urn, because I was like, no, I want my baby with me. It's my baby, you know.
Yeah.
And it was hard. And like, you know, in my urn, God, my porn. I have engraved "Too Beautiful for Earth." And like, you can tell how many times I've rubbed my finger over it because it's fading. And it's just, it's a lot of people don't realize how much this affects women, no matter how far along you were. It doesn't matter if you were early. It doesn't matter if you were 20 weeks. It doesn't matter. Because if this was a wanted baby, it is still your baby. So you still automatically have that bond. You're looking forward to those first moments. You're thinking of names. You're, you know, oh, I felt something. You're wanting to cry. I know for me, I watched from the time I was 4 weeks until I lost the baby. Every week I had an ultrasound because at first they couldn't find the heartbeat. And then they found it. And they were like, oh, you're good. We're good. Everything's great. You know, my baby was a little, I like to call it a little dinosaur, you know, fully formed. and then I lost my baby 3 days later. And so it was like, I was finally told I could relax and everything was going to be okay. And then that's when it happened. Oh, and it's like, you know, this was my baby. And so I hate when people are, oh God, the worst. Oh, you can try for another one. At least you know you could have children.
What? That is, who said
Oh, there's
that?
A plan. There's a plan. There's a reason this happened. No, there's no reason in the world. I don't care what you say. There is no reason in the world that would be worth it to me for my child to die. Look at one of your children and tell me which one you would be okay with it as long as there was a reason for it happening. You wouldn't. So it's not okay to say that to a mom who's dealing with pregnancy loss.
No, those are the worst words ever. I can't even... That's just awful. I'm so sorry anybody ever said that to you.
Unfortunately, you hear it a lot when you go through this.
You know, I think I bet you do. I bet you do. People get awkward. They don't know what to say. They want to, and they just say the wrong thing. It's almost as bad as saying nothing at all and pretending like it never happened. I think a good thing to say, I don't know what to say, but I understand, I know you, that hurt. I can see, you know, just be there.
I can sympathize, you know.
Yeah, I know. I can't even imagine how much that hurt. But trying to brush it off, No, we need people to see. You don't feel seen. It makes you invisible. When you know, I don't have time to deal with this, so I'm just going to, you know, you'll have another one and walk away. That's not a good way to communicate.
It's definitely not.
And look at somebody and let them know, you know, I can tell that this really hurt you and I can't even imagine. And I'm sorry that happened. If you ever want to talk and give me a better understanding, even, you know, when you don't know what to say, it's okay. Sometimes people do when they're hurting. You see them on Twitter sometimes just falling apart. You know, they're having a night and they're blasting. They don't have any place else to go. And they'll be blasting it out the world. And some people go, oh, you're just seeking attention. And sometimes that's the first time they've ever done that, ever been really obvious in their pain. And people just, if you don't, it's a thing. Anyways.
That's why I wrote this book, though. It's because I want people to realize
that's amazing.
It's okay.
Yeah, exactly. That's amazing. I'm so glad you put that in there. That, I talk about all the time how stories, our stories, even the fantastical ones, even the erotic ones, that they are communication, and communication builds empathy and it builds community. And so that is really amazing thing that you shared that, and then other aspects. I know that your other books also have other kind of things, you know, that you tackle other kind of things, and so that's really an amazing to put in the. I just love that it's in a different world, and it's a different. I'm gonna have to let you guys go though. We've been talking too long, and I'm so that you came on though and read. I really enjoyed that very very much. I know my audience will love that. So I hope you, I know it's getting late too where you are. So thank you very, very much, both of you, for coming on. And I'll plug audience on the books and all the links and stuff will be beneath the, under the podcast in the notes. So you can look that up and find that. What I do is I recirculate it. I repost the live streams, but there's actually, I'll give you the link, there's actually a place on the Podbean website where if you want to listen to the live stream, the replay online right now, you actually can. That's a new feature. I do.
I'm already giving you anxiety over that.
Oh, gosh. I do repost them because that way they go to iTunes and all the other, you know, Spotify and all the other little places. But, yeah, if you want to come to the website and you're just like, I missed it, I'll put the link out, too. So thank you guys so much. You have a great evening.
Thank you so much for having us.
I'm so honored. This was a ton of fun. Oh, my. Well, I mean, until we got to the sad part. But there is a happy ending. And I think it's powerful that you shared your story in that way. So it's not. Yeah. Yeah. Very much. Have a great evening. And I'll see you on Facebook.
Hey, talk later.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Wow. I mean, I love that so much that they share, you know, that in the realm of fantasy, there's these real relationships, there's real encounters, there's real feelings, and, you know, sometimes that makes it easier even to look at them and work through your own when you see it out of context with your world. It's a unique and powerful way to communicate, and it is important, and it has massive amounts of value. I am so grateful you guys came on, and I learned something about, I will always need to take notes on every fantasy book I ever write. Thank you guys, and have a great evening.